After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Pitch. Swing and a long drive, deep left, way back, gone!
Hey everybody, J.J. Cooper, Carlos Collazo here on another Baseball America playoff podcast presented by MyBookie. We are sitting here in the aftermath of the busiest playoff day that baseball has ever seen. If you tell me that you were locked in on every pitch of every game of yesterday, I will tell you, you are a true diehard fan. I tip my cap, but at the same time, I also say, no, there's no way. And the reason there was no way is that there was a time there where I was trying to keep track of four screens. And if you could do so, you are a way better person than I am, because I kept having to focus on one and bounce around. There's no other way to do it.
You're giving the fans who claim that too much credit, JJ. I think I would simply call them a liar.
Yeah, I'm very kind when I say these things. You know,
but it was fun.
It was fun
in a weird way. It was fun because there were plenty of good games, and with eight playoff games, I guess you would kind of assume that that would be the case. But also, I feel like there's a sense of just being overwhelmed, just because
absolutely
of the number of games going on. So as a fan of the game, you want to be tuned into all these games and you want to be kind of seeing the key moments for all these games, but it just isn't that possible. So you just kind of have to lock into the games that are tighter or the games that are kind of near the end and focus on the early games a little bit later. But we just jump into it. I mean, we had a couple of really good ones, and then the first game of the day was probably the longest game of the day.
And the best, I would say. I
think so. Unless you're a fan of either team.
Yeah. You know, if you're a fan of your team, it may have been a little bit too much for you. But if you just were a fan, I don't know how. There were people who pushed back when I said, you know, what a great almost five hours that was. Which, again, let me make something clear. I don't mind.
We're talking about Braves Reds now.
Yes. I don't mind 5-hour games if you said it's a 1-0 13-inning game that took almost 5 hours. No complaints here at all. It's when you say it was a, you know, whatever to whatever 9-inning game that took 5 hours. That's when I raise my hand and say, we got to get the pace of play sped up a little bit here. That game was not a problem of pace of play. That was two aces. And I would say, in every definition of the term, I would say that you could argue right now that Trevor Bauer, who has made that jump, I don't think Trevor Bauer has ever been a number one in his career. He had one season that you could make, but I think that you could argue that right now Trevor Bauer is a number one starter. And you had Max Fried, who kind of came into the season expected to be the Braves' number two starter, but with the Mike Soroka injury, credit to him, has utterly ascended into also a number one role. The only argument you could make against this, I'm hearing some scouts I know in my head saying, you know, yeah, you didn't get a chance to do it over 30, you know, 30 plus starts, 150 plus innings. And there's a truth to that. I'll give that. But you had the two of them going out there, and Carlos, I mean, doing what both of those teams hoped that they would do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, both these guys had excellent regular seasons on the mound, kind of being that ace for their team. Max Fried would have been a great compliment to Mike Trocker if he was healthy for the Braves, but I mean, it was kind of more of the same for them. I was curious to see how the Braves' offense would kind of match up with Bauer, who's one of the favorites for the NL Cy Young Award this year. And I guess the cliche held true that good pitching beats good hitting. 7.2 innings, 12 strikeouts, two hits. He had nine whiffs on his slider. That was really his kind of go-to secondary offering, and he was really just confusing Braves hitters all day. I think there was maybe one really hard hit ball from Ronald Acuna late in that outing, but he was just dominant. I don't think you can ask any more of what he did in terms of taking the ball deep and racking up that many whiffs. On the other side, Max Fried, he wasn't quite as dominant, but seven shutout innings with five strikeouts and no walks from a pitcher who's making his first appearance in the playoffs, his first start in the playoffs. I mean, I don't think you can ask any more of that. So on both sides, you really get what you wanted from your starting pitchers. And then really the bullpens were impressive as well. It's really just
very impressive.
A matter of when was the run finally going to come across. And I think it was a good moment for Freddie Freeman, who we talk about a lot of awards in this game. He's one of the favorites to be the NL MVP. Him coming through with his walk-off in the bottom of the 13th, just slapping a single into the right up the middle. I mean, that's the guy that Braves fans want up now. The top of the lineup is pretty good. But I think if you had to choose between Acuna, Freeman, or Marcell Ozuna, most Braves fans would feel confident having Freddie Freeman go up there with a game on the line like this.
Well, especially at the point in the game where you're saying right there, you're not saying you need a homer. You're mm-hmm. saying you need a ball hit, you know, you need a ball in the outfield.
Yep.
And make contact, do not strike out. That's what Freddie Freeman is outstanding at. And he came through.
Yep.
And if you're a Reds fan, if you're the Reds, you have to shake your head because the opportunities were there in the extra innings. Were. I mean, Darren O'Day was poor. I don't think there's another way to put it. In a game where basically the Braves' bullpen depth that they didn't have until the trade deadline last year, but they actually even expanded on this year, mm-hmm. really was paying off. Tyler Matzek came in a pretty difficult situation, and you know they got out of it. And the fact that Tyler Matzek's doing that, we at Baseball America we root for players. That's not probably a shock. And Tyler Matzek's a guy, you know, first round pick who really came out as a pro and was overwhelmed in some ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, he battled ineffectiveness. He battled control problems. At one point, the Rockies sent him back to his, high school, personal pitching coach, see if they could fix him. That didn't really seem to do enough. And there was a stretch there where Tyler Matzek was out of the game. Then there was a stretch where he was trying to come back and he was with the Texas Airhogs of the American Association. And here you are just a couple of years after that, a couple of years after he's out of baseball, a couple of years after he's in indie ball, just hoping to get another shot. And he's handed the ball in the most important game of the season so far for the Braves. Mm-hmm. And he made it work. I love seeing stories like that. And
yeah, four strikeouts, around two hits and 1.1 innings. I mean, the Braves bullpen as a whole through six innings struck out 11 batters and walked three. So that's pretty good. I mean, we know the Braves bullpen is a strength of this team heading into this, and they pitched to that today. So it is cool though, seeing a guy who has a story like Matzek succeeding in the playoffs. It's always nice. It's very wholesome, and it just makes you feel good about baseball.
The other thing I'll say, though, when you talk about, again, it's a three-game series. Winning game one of the three-game series for anyone is vitally important because now you just need to win one rather than two. You can go 500 now and win the series. Mm-hmm. But when I look at these two teams, the Braves getting that game one win with Max Fried on the mound is probably, for them, more important than the Reds getting that win with Trevor Bauer on the mound. The Reds have a rotation where Trevor Bauer is their ace, but in a three-game series, they're going to put really good starting pitchers on the mound in all three games. They feel very confident about that. The Braves have an ace. Then they have Ian Anderson, who's been great, but at the same time is also less than 10 major league starts on his resume. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to have probably Kyle Wright, who was basically knocked out of the rotation a month and a half ago. He just basically the last three starts of his season are the bright spot that you're kind of counting on here. So The Braves needed, if they're going to advance out of this series, they needed a little bit more wiggle room after game one. Mm-hmm. And they got it. Again, just a great game. Just everything that you could hope for in the 12 o'clock game. It's funny, you don't hear any flip side. Like, everyone wants to complain about how there's night games, you know, during the playoffs. But we had the cavalcade of day games yesterday, and no one talks about how, you know, no one gives credit for the fact that that was going to give, you know, a generation of kids a chance to watch playoff baseball, which was more playoff baseball than kids could watch, although they're in school. That's why there's a problem with day baseball too.
Well, hopefully a lot of them were doing virtual school and could just, you know, not really pay attention.
My kids were, but I couldn't talk them into watching, baseball. I try. Before we go to our next game, stay tuned for the quick message here.
It's fall, and at MyBookie, that can mean only one thing. It's winning season. Winning season means doubling your first deposit. Winning season means free bets, super contests, Survivor, and more. At MyBookie, winning season is all about your chance to win big. You can bet the NBA playoffs, Major League Baseball, UFC, NFL, and then some. The craziest sports fall of your lifetime is here. It's simple. Make your picks, win big, collect your cash. Invest in your intuition. Select from hundreds of future bets where you can bet games in real time with MyBookie's live betting. Put that big brain of yours to good use. Use promo code BASEBALLAMERICA and double your first deposit. New players get up to $1,000 in free play designed to add more excitement to the sports you love and the games you bet. Thousands of cross sports wagers, props, and parlays await. Sign up now to bet with the best and celebrate your victory. Your winning season begins today only at MyBookie.
The Astros beat the Twins 3-1, finished that series, and then not long thereafter, the Rays finished off the Blue Jays 8-2. The more compelling of those two games by far was Astros Twins. That was a compelling series. Mm-hmm. The Astros won both games of it, and I think the story of that series for both games is twice in two games, the Twins had a first inning where they could have really blown the game open. Yep. Bases loaded, two outs. Twice in two games, they came out of a bases loaded situation in the first inning with no runs. Mm-hmm. I'll throw it to you just to ask the question. Like, I mean, is that just, you know, it's 18, it's 18 losses now.
Yeah, I was about to say, when you're talking about the team that has 18 straight playoff losses, I think anything happening is on the table. It is kind of depressing, because just imagine a team losing 18 straight in the regular season. What would get written about them? What would the players talk about?
It would be
the fact that it's happened 18 straight in the – like, I don't even know what the odds of that would be. Even if you
– astronomical.
It's insane. There's clearly some sort of little mini curse or some sort of mental thing going on. I'm sure the players are thinking about it every time at this point. It's hard for them not to. But yeah, like you said, they had opportunities early, didn't capitalize, and really the bats never looked threatening the rest of the way in both of these games for the most part. The Twins are obviously one of the better teams in baseball, and I think, I don't know how much you want to talk about format, but I think this is the best example we're going to have of why we shouldn't have 16 teams in a normal season. I'm fine with it this year, obviously. It's 2020. Things are weird. I get it. But I don't think it's a good look for baseball to have a sub-500 team beating one of the better teams over the course of the regular season in two games to advance. And we can talk about the Astros for a long time, but I think it makes it even cringier that it's this Astros team that is the team who's doing that, because surely everyone in baseball is rooting against them outside of their own fans. And the fact that they only got into the playoffs because it's basically a participation trophy this year is going to make a lot of people hate them even more. And I think, to be honest, some comments after the game from guys like Carlos Correa aren't doing them any favors. It's like, this team, you just need to be quiet.
I will push back on that. When you say not doing any favors, I think it's more of, you know, it's kind of recognizing the reality of it and embracing it, which is,
yeah,
there are, I actually enjoy the fact, if you're the Astros, wear the black hat at this point. Like,
sure. You know, but I mean, this is a team that has put out a lot of tone deaf statements lately, and just their tweet after the game, I mean, if I'm in this position, I just want my team to shut up and keep winning, because you're going to keep pulling for them, but just don't draw attention.
I follow what you're saying there. I do follow.
I don't understand it. The Astros tweet after this game, "Stay mad, we'll stay winning." And I don't have Correa's quote. His quote is, I mean, his was probably the worst quote of the two. I'll try and pull that up really quick, but I might be overreacting here. I just don't think it's a great look for you if you're the Astros.
You know, I know a lot of people are mad. Yes.
But what are they going to say now? Something like that?
I know a lot of people don't want to see us here, but what are they going to say now?
Yeah, see, this is the thing. Like, when you only have to win two games in a playoff series, it really is almost meaningless. So you have to give them credit for winning, though. I do give them credit for winning. They look
better
than
the Twins. And two things with this that stood out to me. One, the Bomba squad did not hit a homer, and in two games had two doubles, both by Nelson Cruz. That's your only extra base hits. That's not again, the Twins offense was not as good in 2020 as it was in 2019. Their pitching was much better. Starting pitching was much better. But I kind of wonder if that's a Twins team that's going to be a little bit kind of reconfigured. They still have a young core. They still have everything there to be the team, you know, a team to win the Central in 2021 as well. But the offense just did not click in in the two games of the playoffs. And the other thing that I will say with that, the Astros have been, you know, they are, in addition to everything that you just talked about, they also have been Mr. Unconventional. Mm-hmm. And one thing that stands out to me that happened in this series is essentially they used the tandem starter system that they used in the minors effectively in this series. In game one, it was Zach Greinke handing it over to Framber Valdez, and essentially they went to dual starter in that game to eat most of the, you know, pretty much almost all the innings. Framber Valdez handed it off very late. Mm-hmm. In this game, they did something that they also do very regularly in the minors for their players when they're developing pitchers, which is Jose Urquidy went 4.1. They handed it over to Brooks Raley, which, you know, that was the situation where I kind of felt like Minnesota had it shot, because they did get right-handers against Raley because of the new rules of, you know, the postseason. I mean, not the postseason of 2020, where you can't bring a lefty in and have face one batter. Yep. But then they hand it over to Christian Javier, and Christian Javier goes very effectively for three innings. And it's like, okay, now we hand it over to closer Ryan Pressly to finish it out.
Yep.
Christian Javier, Jose Urquidy, and Framber Valdez. I'm not saying it about Zach Greinke, who started game one. He's just started game one, though. All of those guys have been doing that all the way through their minor league development. And I do think that stands out.
I think that's a good point.
Where them doing that in the minors actually really is beneficial. We talk about, you know, throwing, you know, massive pens at the playoffs. Well, another way you can do it, especially in a short series, it's going to be a little different when we get to the best of five and the best of seven. But in a short series, you can, instead of saying we're going to throw seven relievers at you, you can say we're going to throw two starters at you. And by the way, we're often going to try to make those two starters kind of be the yin and yang. Mm-hmm. And that was effective for him. So when you say trends that may develop, I'm interested to see if that's one that we will see a little bit more of in the future.
Nope, that's a good call.
The Rays just that game was over kind of almost before Hyun-Jin Yoo gives up a grand slam to Hunter Renfroe. And after that, with Tyler Glasnow, that was effectively it. My only thing, I tweeted this yesterday, it struck about that is Rays were clearly the better team than Toronto right now. Nate Pearson, by the way, impressive outing. But the other thing is I feel like with the Blue Jays, this is like, okay, step one complete. We made the playoffs. We now know what it's like to be in the playoffs. Now the next step is to be better next year, because with this young core, they should be back.
To not just be a token playoff team, because let's be honest, they don't get into the playoffs in a normal year. But yes, I do think it is important that a lot of these young guys got to experience it and see that environment. But I have to give all the credit to the Rays here. I mean, they were the overwhelming favorites on paper, and I think this is the series that has gone pretty much – this is the only series to this point that's gone basically exactly as you would have expected. I mean, this is such a deep team. They have so many bats they can throw at you. They can order their righties and lefties in any order depending on the pitching matchup. They can do the exact opposite in the bullpen. They have really good starting pitchers. There's no weakness to be found here. And I feel like this is kind of what we've been saying with the Rays for the past several years. They just do an excellent job. And I think, I mean, the Hunter Renfroe homer has to make them feel good, because that trade, probably looking back at it, it's not great. But he has always been a guy who hits lefties really well. And if he's going to hit lefties with impact in the playoffs, I mean, you can basically take that as a win, because you need him to do that in the postseason.
The thing that stood out to me about that also is, as he said, Hunter Renfroe didn't have a great season, but he came up yesterday. Manuel Margot hasn't been great for them, but he came up during this postseason, you know, this series. You know, Randy Arozarena, who was also acquired in the offseason, they have this completely reworked outfield that also doesn't include Austin Meadows, who we expected to be a big part of it, but he's had injury problems this year, which has been a problem for Austin Meadows for much of his career. But they completely reworked it, and it came up very big for them. All three of those guys had big moments in this in this first round of the playoffs. And they move on, and they're a team that looks very dangerous. And not only that, but again, you win two games in this, you will be fully reset, fully ready to go for the second round. Chris Bassitt pitches outstandingly for the A's. Dallas Keuchel gets roughed up, and so we go to game three in White Sox A's. I think the big thing that was much gnashing of teeth in A's land after that game, though, was Liam Hendricks going one and two third, 49 pitches, and kind of the question of why was he kind of called on to pitch the eighth in that situation. It didn't necessarily work out all that well. After the game, there was talk that, you know, that he will be going, you know, be available in game three. I don't know necessarily if that's a good thing coming off of 49 pitches and one and two thirds innings. I mean, like, technically anyone's available in an elimination game. I get it, but, you know, there is the question of effectiveness, and there's also the question of, okay, you hope to win this game, and then you hope to keep playing for quite a while longer in October. Well, if you thrash out, you know, one of your best pitchers in the first round, that may make it a little difficult to have him be effective down the road. But, you know, that game, you know, is that series remains very interesting.
Yeah, I think this is the must-watch game. I mean, I don't think that we have any guaranteed elimination games outside of this one. Obviously, they all could. But this is our game three at 3:10 today, if you're listening today, which I hope you are. But yeah, that's going to be a fun one. I mean, the White Sox lineup is really fun. Tim Anderson just continuing to be one of the best pure hitters in the game is awesome. I think although Nick Madrigal didn't have a great game defensively, which is a little surprising to me, he continues.
Yeah, he made a nice couple plays too, in addition to mistake.
Yeah, the one error with the bases loaded, I think, really kind of bit them. And he had a couple errors in that game. But he's a guy who he hit for a really high average without a lot of power, got on base throughout the regular season, and he's kind of continued to do that. So he's definitely a name that I circle in the lineup and just get excited when I see him, in addition to Robert and a lot of the other guys that we're talking about in this lineup.
Robert.
Yeah, Robert. I'm just so used to it's so weird to me that it's Robert.
But and then we also, our other day games, we had the Marlins basically get on feast on Kyle Hendricks in the seventh, you know, for everything that we talk about. I know that we, you know, that there's, oh, you know, we want guys to go longer. We want guys, you know, why is it that everyone gets pulled? Kyle Hendricks is one of the best pitchers in the Cubs have. They don't have a great bullpen, but you know, but the reality of it is that third time through the order is more difficult. He faced 28 batters, and it was the last few that were the ones that kind of got to him. But I also, you know, Starling Marte hit on the hand, breaks his, you know, breaks a finger, which is kind of potentially.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we have any kind of status on him? Do we know how available?
He's hoping to play, but he's hoping to play with a broken pinky. That does make hitting a little harder.
A bit difficult.
But Sandy Alcantara was great. And I just got to be honest, watching that game, I kind of felt like that this is not – I didn't feel like that was an upset. I felt like
that
Miami is every bit at least as good as Chicago. And you got to like their chances. You know, now again, Yu Darvish going to the mound for Chicago. If in the National League, there are not many pitchers I would rather see, you know, have to go in game two in a must win game, but that would be must watch too. Because
yeah, I'm curious if the bats in the middle of the Cubs lineup are going to wake up at any point. I mean, Rizzo, Brian, Schwarber all had disappointing seasons and they didn't do much at all yesterday outside of two walks from Kyle Schwarber. So I think if that team's going to go, those bats are going to have to wake up. Right now, Ian Happ's doing a pretty good job. Jason Hayward had a good year. But you really need that core of the lineup to kind of wake up and carry them. And whether or not they're going to do that is going to be interesting for me.
Cardinals, Padres, if you said, like, I feel for Twins fans, like, losing 18 straight playoff games has to put you in a really bad headspace. If you said which team I feel for the Padres because I feel like that they were legitimately – this is not a team that snuck in because of the 16-team playoffs. This is a team that's been legitimately good slash great.
They're a top four team in the league just based on run differential and record. Yeah. So they definitely belong. They're definitely one of the favorites and – obviously, and now it could all end in two games. Like
they've been gutted right now because of injuries. Because they started in game one, a starter who, this is not a great sign for you. Which is in the last couple of days of the season, like there, you know, I think it was a Zoom call had to be because you know that's how we, you know, there's no clubhouse, you know, work in the clubhouse. But beat writers were talking to Chris Paddock, and he was kind of like, no, you guys, if you think that I'm not going to be on this postseason roster, you're wrong. I'm absolutely going to be on the postseason roster, which was true. But if you have a starter who is having to reassure everyone that he will be included on a 28-man postseason roster and then flip ahead a couple of days and you're saying, hey, Chris, here's the ball for game one, not a good sign. And I don't know what a good answer for them was. They stuck. He clearly didn't have it. They stuck with him a little longer than they probably should have, and it led to a line of 2 1/3, 8 hits, 6 earned runs, 0 walks, 1 strikeout. There's not much good there. There's not much that you can say positive about that. That said, their top two pitchers are hurt and are off the roster. You know, Mike Clevinger, Dennison Lamet are not going to pitch in this series. And with that, I understand also you go into this going, we don't want to just turn this over to the bullpen in game one in the second inning. I mean, as it stands, they use 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 relievers in a game that they
pitched fairly well.
Yeah.
Who kept them in the game.
I mean, the reality is they were in this game. They did have.
Now, this is the point I wanted to kind of bring up, is that the Padres' offense looked threatening the entire game for my mind. Like 8 hits, 4 walks, 5 strikeouts, 4 runs, obviously. But I feel like they were constantly putting pressure on the Cardinals' pitching staff. And I think this is such a deep lineup. I mean, one of the best offenses in baseball this year. So many of these players can do damage. And I do want to touch on Cronenworth here because he had a good game with the bat, not a great game on the bases.
No.
And I think we haven't actually talked about base running at all.
Oh, but we need to.
Yesterday was really bad across the board. Really bad. So, but I do think it's fascinating that really quick on some of the young hitters, if you do OPS, I know it's only a game or two. There are a lot of young hitters that are kind of leading the way here. Josh Naylor, Jake Cronenworth, Leiber Torres, Corey Seager, Dylan Carlson, Ian Happ. It's really cool to see a lot of these young hitters doing the damage so far in these playoffs. And Cronenworth is one of those guys, but you got to run the bases better.
What was the most egregious? There were a lot of bad base running, but I think one that was the baffling one to me that was not bad base running as much as in the postseason, the idea of we're going to try to steal, you know, second and hopefully get the run to score when they throw down.
So this is Reds Braves. I think this is the most egregious one too. And maybe it is because of kind of the context of that game that it just stands out more. But I don't have the numbers of how successful that play is, but I can't imagine at the major league level, you're running a stolen base gimmick play that works in Little League, like half the
time. I was going to say, at the Little League level, that is a great play to do, where you're talking about the catcher can't get the ball to second.
And if we got it half the time, we were pumped about it. And I just don't understand. Like,
okay, so now you go from Little League to high school, and you're like, at the high school level, it's still a play that you pull out, you know, a couple of times. You get to the college level, and it's like, you know, this team we're facing is kind of fundamentally unsound. They don't have a great catcher.
You're relying on a major league team to basically not be good at the most fundamental aspect of the game, which is catching and throwing the baseball. You're not going to outrun someone who's throwing the ball from second to home.
And let's establish also, this wasn't – Aristides Aquino moves pretty well. He's a – for a slugger, he's a good athlete.
Yeah.
That said, that wasn't Terrence Gore. That wasn't Billy Hamilton. That wasn't, you know, you weren't talking about someone here like, oh, no. If he just, you just give him a slight Hamilton opportunity, he'll still home.
That said, we also had one of the fastest players in baseball in Byron Buxton make a base running error.
Oh, that one.
Talked about that.
That one may be mine. To me, like, as much as you talk about, like, that one was worse to me because this was an intentional decision. I don't like the decision. But by the way, we also should make clear, Austin Riley, at the end of that rundown, if it's 2016, 2017 Austin Riley, he's not quick enough to make that tag. He dives and just misses Aristides Aquino. And Aquino basically scores there. And we were talking about, wow, I can't believe that worked. The Byron Buxton pickoff was, this is your last good chance to win this game. And again, I understand completely you want to steal second. You want to get Buxton moving, all of those things. That said, you can't get picked off there. You cannot get picked off there. And if that meant that you had to glue him to the base until, you know, old, you know, fast pitch softball style, you know, with no lead, you can't get picked off there.
Agreed. 100%. Hopefully, I mean, there is some aspect of the base running gaffes that's fun to watch, but also you don't really want to see it. I mean, this is supposed to be where the best baseball is played. We don't want to see that really. So hopefully it's a little bit better today. But anything else on the Padres Cardinals you want to look ahead to?
I still think the Padres, I agree with you. I think the Padres could win this.
I'm crossing my fingers for.
What?
Mackenzie Gore. He's. I don't know what the odds are that he comes up, but we're talking about a team that is struggling to find some arms that are healthy. Mackenzie Gore is.
I'll give you the analogy.
To see Mackenzie Gore.
Matt Moore. I'm going to give you right now an example of how this can work. Matt Moore. Again, I know that right now you think of Matt Moore and you go, there's a lot of injuries, a lot of ineffectiveness. I mean, you've got to put go back a decade. Matt Moore was the best pitching prospect in the minor leagues, minor league player of the year. And the reality of it is that the Rays were absolute, and they'd done this with David Price as a reliever. But Matt Moore, I'm looking it up, 2011, he throws – 3 games, 1 start, 9 innings in the regular season. By the way, he's really good in those 9 innings. But so what do? They hand him the ball, and in the ALDS, he makes 2 appearances, you know, but the most important one is so game one of the against the Rangers, 7 innings, 2 hits, no runs, none earned, 2 walks, 6 Ks. I'm not telling you that Mackenzie Gore would do that, but I'm not telling you he couldn't do that. Yeah. If you're sitting here, if they get out of this round, I think they seriously have to. If they don't have Lament, and if they don't, and I don't think they're going to have Clevinger, you know, probably in the playoffs. If they don't have those guys, and you're saying it's a best, you know, it's a best of five, what you have to lose is you have to add him to the 40-man, and it's a crowded 40-man. But it's the playoffs. It's the postseason. I'm with you.
This is my biggest item on the wish list for playoffs is seeing Mackenzie Gore throw for the Padres. I think that would be outstanding. And I don't know how much not having a regular minor league season might impact this decision or what the actual odds are. But the fact that they made him available to be added to the
They're thinking about
roster,
it.
I mean, it's a possibility for sure. And I would love to know what the actual odds are of that happening if they advance.
They are thinking about it. I mean, yeah. at least he's encased in glass. He's hanging there, you know, by the fire alarm. And it's like, if we have to, maybe we go that direction.
I think we need to touch on Yanks, Indians, and then maybe to a lesser extent, Dodgers, Brewers. But the Yankees.
Well, let's wrap up the Dodgers, Brewers real quick, because that one, I give the Brewers credit. If you'd have told me 15 minutes into that game, 20, I guess it was 20 minutes into that game, if you'd have told me that would be a two-run game where the Brewers would have opportunities to win that game, I would have said that you are crazy.
Yep.
You know, that was a game where that could have been it's everyone can go to bed on the East Coast, really, you know, and not worry about it. In the first inning, Suter was absolutely uncharacteristically wild. Mookie Betts was really good, as he often is. But I give credit to the Brewers. I could not imagine that game would end up being a 4-2 game. Nope. When you were looking at the first inning or two of that game.
Yeah, when your starter goes 1.2, 3 hits, 3 earned runs, 5 walks, you definitely think you'd get a lot more out of hand than it did. So it is a credit to the Brewers for just kind of staying competitive.
That said, the Dodgers are the better team. We all know that the Dodgers are the better team. And by the way, if you want to say about the Twins and the Astros series, if somehow the Brewers won this series, that would be your premium argument of horrible. Like
– that would be the worst case – that'd be the worst outcome for this playoffs if the Dodgers lose to the Brewers.
Because, again, no one can say that this Brewers team, nothing against them, but they're not even in the same – they're not close to the same class
as
the Dodgers.
No, not at all. They shouldn't be – I mean, let's be honest. They shouldn't be playing each other in the playoffs. They're another sub-500 team, but whatever.
And now they're basically – I mean, they have to get out of this round to – I mean, they're basically guaranteed to be a sub-500 team playoff postseason record included unless they advance. But – the other great game of the day, I think we could say, was New York and Cleveland, back and forth, very back and forth. Cleveland jumps all over, you know, all over Tanaka and the Indians. I mean, and the Yankees in the first inning of that game. Then the Yankees, I give utter credit to this Yankees lineup for everything I talked about with the Twins.
Real scary now,
like. The Yankees are doing it, which is you can have a power-driven lineup. That's baseball in 2020, but you got to hit for power. And the Yankees, it a 2-3-4-run lead does not feel very safe against them because Giancarlo Stanton's healthy, Giancarlo Stanton's healthy, no part can contain him.
The Indians jumped out to a 4-run lead in the first, and with this pitching staff, you would think, hey, you're feeling pretty good, but really the story for the Indians in these two games for me is their pitching really just did not come through the way you'd expect. Bieber did not have a great start. In this one, they let up 10 runs. Carrasco threw 3 innings.
Well, the decision was I have yet to see – again, I'm on Twitter during these games a lot. I find that I'm one of the people who actually finds Twitter enjoyable. It's not a – you know,
I'm with you. You can literally cater your experience. It should be enjoyable.
Yes, that's the key thing. You got to curate your feed so that you get that. But James Karinchak coming in for Carrasco in that situation had a 100% approval rating among everyone on Twitter talking about it. Everyone was like, yeah, this makes perfect sense. You know, you need the strikeout here. You've got the bases loaded. Karinchak's the guy to turn to here. Yeah, this makes sense. And, you know, if you're going to hand it over to a guy, he's a guy to hand it over. Doesn't give up home runs. He gets strikeouts. Oops. You know, and hey, Gio Urshela, the story of this game. I mean, offensively, defensively.
Which hit was more impressive to you, his home run or going down like a foot below the zone? And what was it, the 9th inning, I think, to kind of keep that inning alive? That pitch should never be hit like that. It was exceptionally good feel for like going down there and putting the barrel on the ball. I was shocked when I kind of saw that because I wasn't watching this one live. I had to see it in the morning, but like that was really impressive.
That was impressive. The other thing, again, you're talking about the little subtle things. Brad Hand not a good day, you know.
Oh, my gosh.
When he goes to spring training next year, when they say we're going to do PFPs, pitcher fielding practice, he needs to, you know, bear down there, because that's one of those differences in that game. Mm-hmm. Is he was given – the DJ LeMahieu hit went right back up the middle. I want to make it clear, Greg Maddux probably makes that play. Short of that, there are not a whole lot of pitchers ever who make that play. I mean, that one would have been a tough one. But before that, he did have a ball that I would say that the average pitcher makes that play. I guess it would have been Glaber's, you know, and that is where that kind of that series turned.
Yep.
And great game though. And again, I utter credit to the Yankees. They were great in that series, especially offensively.
Yeah. They're a scary team. The Rays are a scary team. I hope those two end up matching up, because they really just look like the best teams in the American League right now. But I'm looking forward to another packed day of baseball. This one almost feels light in comparison.
By the way, I got good news for you. That's the series. That's the ALDS series, is Rays Yankees.
Oh, so, there we go. Got it already. You know,
the Astros will play the winner of A's White Sox.
I think the overwhelming favorite in the American League has to come from the top of that bracket, right?
Right. But at the same time, if the A's also own the Astros during the regular season, but if it goes A's Astros in the ALDS, I kind of start to think, I think that you may be pulling hair out of Carlos Correa quotes, a week from now too.
Oh man, we'll see. It'll be fun.
You know, but yeah, we have Reds Braves today at 12:08. I like those games being the noon games. Yeah. I hope the shadows are a little that was one thing that drove me crazy was balls hit to the outfield. It's a camera aperture issue. I get it. I understand a little bit about photography and photons and all that. That said, it was like any ball hit to the wall in the early innings of that Braves Reds games yesterday was like the outfielder disappeared into a gaping mm-hmm. void. And then you just trusted that, you know, like eventually the camera would open up, you know, would close the aperture enough. I should say close enough that you could see the outfielder and go, okay, did he catch it? Is the ball rolling around? I don't know. Marlins Cubs 2:08. Then we go White Sox A's, our only absolutely guaranteed loser goes home game at 3:10. Cardinals Padres 7:08 and Brewers Dodgers 10:08. I'm glad it's five. I don't need eight again.
We have some really good pitchers on the mound as well. Kershaw's throwing. Adam Wainwright's throwing. We've got a really good matchup with Sixto Sanchez and Yu Darvish, and then I think the Castillo and Anderson pitching battle is going to be a fun one as well. So
it'll be fun. We're trying to get in and out on these so that we can get them to you before the next game starts. So we hope you enjoy this, and we do thank you as always for listening to the Baseball America Playoff Podcast presented by MyBookie. So for Carlos Collazo, I'm JJ Cooper. So long, everybody.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.